Okay, I'm one of us. You can probably figure out who that is. What I'm going to talk about is the larger context in which classical British political economy becomes intertwined with black history. And the larger picture is one of whether people are all the same or all different. And there's two sides of the debate. And one side of the debate is the political economist and the evangelicals, who says everybody's more or less the same. And the other side of the debate, which literary folks, anthropologists, biostatisticians, who say people are different. What this is a preview of a book, another book that's coming out from Michigan. It's the same place that we heard about yesterday. But this past faculty review at the University of Michigan. So, and the pictures are going to be about the literary side, because the biostatistics doesn't make nice pictures. So,
here's a picture.
That's a real picture. It comes from Tobacco Public Relations in the 1870s. That's John Ruskin on the horse trampling an evangelical who has a little pamphlet that says political economy. And on the tag of the evangelical is a word that says can't. And can't is a term for evangelicals. One of the chapters in the book is we do the linguistics of that phrase. So that's sort of a visualization of the pictures, a visualization of the debate. You've got on one side, you've got evangelical economist on the bottom getting crunched by, next to Ruskin is Carlyle, by the greatest literary figures in that era of Britain. Okay. Okay, here's some words. Okay, the dismal science is an old term for economics or political economy. It came into the language in 1849 in an article Thomas Carlyle wrote called Occasional Discourse on the Negro Question. Now, there's two colors. That's a couple sentences. What's in the yellow is what's in the Oxford English Dictionary. What's in the white is what's not in the Oxford English Dictionary. Okay, so the Oxford English Dictionary has the reference. It's got the name wrong, but that's an understandable mistake. It's got the reference quoted, but it's so quoted. Let me read you what's not quoted. The article is supposed to be a talk at Exeter Hall. Exeter Hall is the political center of the anti-slavery movement in Britain. And this is 1849. It's between British emancipation and American emancipation. So the Brits have gotten rid of slavery in the empire. Now the attention is focused on America. Okay. And so this is supposed to be a talk at Exeter Hall. And it starts out, truly my philanthropic friends, Exeter Hall philanthropy is wonderful. And then the OED kicks in, the social science, not a gay science, but a rueful, which finds a secret of the universe in supply and demand. But then the OED stops. And reduces the duty of human governors to that of letting men alone is also wonderful. Not a gay science, I should say, like some we have heard of, no, a dreary, desolate, indeed quite abject and distressing one, back on, what we might call, by way of eminence, the dismal science. Then OED goes off again. These two, Exeter Hall philanthropy and the dismal science, led by any sacred cause of black emancipation or the like, to fall in love and make a wedding of it, and will give birth to progenies and prodigies, dark, extensive moon calves, unnameable abortions, wild coil monstrosities, such as the world has not seen heretofore. Okay, this paragraph I can put on the board without getting in trouble. A friend of mine in Michigan is in the philosophy department said, this is the text of racial politics. It is not, a lot of our stuff is up on the Liberty Fund website, Econ Lib. The text is not up there because it is too ghastly. So this is where the dismal science got its name. And Carlyle is completely clear, completely candid, completely honest, that it's because of its conjunction, it's the political association with evangelicals for black emancipation. Okay? And so if you go to the Oxford English Dictionary to find out where the word came from, where the word meant, you will find nothing whatsoever about Exeter Hall or black emancipation. You'll find something about supply and demand. Yeah, well, that's right. That's good. That's there. The OED is not making up words. It's just slicing them. Okay? So that's where the word comes from. That's what the stuff is. Okay, what's... Okay. Yeah, Carlyle was an incredibly famous person once upon a time, not so anymore. Probably more important, you still read him in college, Charles Dickens. And want to talk, show some pictures that either have references to Dickens, one of Dickens' best known pieces, Bleak House, or are on the cover of Bleak House. Bleak House came out in serially, that's what Dickens usually wrote. And so there's a cover illustration. We'll look at the cover illustration. And the Bleak House, you know, sort of one of the plots of Bleak House is a lady, Mrs. Jellyby, is much more concerned about the fate of Africans than she is about her kids. Okay? And the chapter in which Mrs. Jellyby is introduced is called Telescopic Philanthropy. Okay, so she's interested in distant people, not the people at home. And let's see some pictures. If you can read that, my eyes aren't any good anymore. It's basically, ain't we black enough to care for? And that this is from Punch, 1865. It's about 4 or 5 months before the massacre in Jamaica. So this is right before what historians know as the Governor Eric controversy. Okay, now you can't, it's hard to see what's going on in the back, so let's... look there, and you see everybody in the picture is black except the white minister. And so you've got this Dickens picture, the Dickens reference in a racial context. You say, oh, that just, you know, that's distortion, misrepresentation. Okay, this is a slice from the front cover of Bleak House, and there's presumably Mrs. Jellyby, holding a couple African kids right next to a sign that says Exeter Hall. That's the anti-slavery movement, and to show you what the whole thing looks like. And so that I don't have a pointer, but it's down in the sort of the bottom center is where that comes from. And if you look on the top and you see, oh, somebody scribbled on the top, did I vandalize that? No, that's Library of Congress's, how the Library of Congress marks things. And their Library of Congress is fabulous, makes photographs of anything you want. So this comes from the Library of Congress holdings. So okay, now one of the things that we have to do is preserve the generality of the debate. The issue is whether people are the same or different. And so there's lots of different people in the world. There's black people, there's Irish people, there's Jewish people. There's lots and lots of different people. So the debates go in many directions. And one of the sort of most striking images in Punch, where the telescopic philanthropy came from, are the Irish images. And it's one of the most interesting pictures is one where John Bright, who's Quaker, member of Parliament, free trader, abolitionist, there's got to be more offensive things, but that'll do. And he's proposing, God help us, democracy for Ireland. And Punch thinks that, I guess the Irish aren't up to it. Now, there's a reference in the image, which I missed, actually, which just proves that I'm real economist, but David Laidler got it. I guess that's an operatic reference. David told us that he now got a rate of return for his operatic investment. Anyway, this is one of the things you see, you know, there's John Bright hawking democracy or radical reform, and the Irish men are apish. There's a term in the literature for this, it's called simianized paddy, which is a nice term. And you know, if you look at the simianized paddy, they're all the same. I mean, so just like if you know, sort of where the white guilt comes from, all white people have the same belief structures, they're all the same. Yeah, this is sort of what that sort of stuff looks like. And so, okay, and so here we've got, and say, well, okay, Bright's, you know, why is the, Bright's a minor league economist in the history of the discipline. It's important politically because that's where the anti-Cornwall stuff comes from. Free trade came because of Bright and Cobden. But from a theoretical point of view, he's not a non-starter. Okay, there's a large number of cartoons in Punch which link John Bright to John Stuart Mill. Okay, John Stuart Mill's a heavy hitter. It would take my 20 minutes or whatever to list his theoretical contributions. So Mill was in Parliament then. And so here you've got, and that's a little, you can't maybe not see, but it says Mill's on Liberty. So there's this linkage between Bright and Mill in the Punch version. So this is economists. These are economists. And, you know, Bright's a Quaker. He'll always tell Bright because he's got the Quaker hat. So broad-brimmed philanthropy is a phrase of the time. And this is sort of Punch's idea. This is how you treat the Irish, because yeah, they're not fully human. And more lessons. And this is right after the massacre in Jamaica. And this is, you know, how you treat the Irish. They don't behave. So that there's, you got a picture, you know, what do you do with troublesome subhumans? Three guesses. Okay, so there's some pictures. We'll get some more. Now, the structure of the debate works like this. Is human nature a policy variable? Can we change human beings by policy? The phrase the new man ought to resonate. It's got a context. And one of the leaders in this side, which is why Ruskin is always pictured in opposition in some images, is because of Ruskin's chemical political economy. And that is the idea that people can be remade in deep structure. Economists think about you change relative prices, people's behavior changes. Ruskin thinks you can remake people. And this is the thing. This is Mr. Ruskin's condemnation of modern social conditions, that we manufacture everything except men. We blanch cotton, strengthen steel, refine sugar, shape pottery. But to brighten, strengthen, refine, or form a single living spirit never enters into our estimation of advantages. So that the idea that human beings are policy can be remade by their betters is the trope. And then, of course, the question is, what happens when people don't want to be remade? Well, it also has the consequence that race, and this is why it gets difficult for modern people to read this stuff, race in this debate becomes a choice. If you tell, if you can decline to listen to your betters, and by so doing devolve. And I actually put this on a t-shirt and dared my students to wear it. The idea seems to be that a lady goes into the household, leaves the beneficent hierarchy of home and husband, goes to work as a maid, and then what happens? She changes in deep structure. So, because we're in a world where we think race is fixed, or maybe, some people don't believe race exists, but when we believe race is fixed, these guys did. Race is a policy variable. You can make people better or worse by policies. Free trade makes people worse. On the other hand, here's more Irish. They don't look like the punch Irish because they're human. Obedience makes you human in this view of the world. Those are the loyal Irish, and they're obvious, they're drawn naturalistically. And then, closing slide, reaction of people who don't like this sort of stuff, what we're doing, is to say, okay, you guys are focusing on Mill, or maybe Adam Smith. Mill's a nice guy. He married a very liberal lady. So it's really not economist, it's Harriet Taylor, and John Stuart Mill, the hand puppet. Okay, we'll play it that way. Okay, here is a statement, which is very famous in the period, from the one great mathematician in classical political economy. This is Charles Babbage. This is the guy that designed the computer in the 1850s. He was Newton's successor at Cambridge. This is his take, his linking of religion and anti-slavery. This is the second full paragraph. The soul of the Negro, whose fettered body, surviving the living charnel house of this infected prison, is obviously the middle passage, was thrown into the sea to lighten the ship that its Christian master might escape the limited justice that length is signed by civilized man to crimes, whose prophet had long gilded their atrocity, will need at the last great day of human account, no living witness of this earthly agony. When man and all his race shall have disappeared from the face of our planet, ask every particle of air still floating over the unpeopled earth, and it will record the cruel mandate of the tyrant. Interrogate every wave which breaks unimpeded on 10,000 desolate shores, and it will give evidence to this last gurgle of the waters which closed over the head of the dying victim. Confront the murderer with every corporal atom of his immolated slave, and in still quivering moments he will read the prophet's denunciation of the prophet king, thou art the man. And so this is Charles Babbage. This is the greatest mathematician in the classical tradition, thinking of a cosmic, an active universe where God as physical law will reveal.